A gross abuse of power. John Berman here, in for Anderson. That's how Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer today characterized the revelation first reported in the New York Times that the Trump Justice Department saw computer data on two Democratic lawmakers on the House Intelligence Committee, one of whom is his current chairman, Adam Schiff, also staff and family members. And we have new reporting tonight on just how broad the scope of it was. But before going any further, we should just get a few things straight. Even though the headline reads, "Hunting leaks, Trump officials focused on Democrats in Congress," the reporting strongly suggests this was no routine leak investigation. None of this was even remotely normal. As we learned last night, what the DOJ did was nearly unprecedented in who it targeted, nor is this normal. As Congressman Schiff was being investigated, fruitlessly it seems, the nation's chief executive was conducting a public vendetta against him, which continued straight through the end of his term.
Little pencil neck Adam Schiff. He's got the smallest, thinnest neck I've ever seen. I saw a little Shifty Schiff yesterday.
You Shifty Schiff?
How did you do it? Shifty Schiff. Okay, Schiff, you know, the world's most dishonest politician.
Adam Schiff, the watermelon head, right?
He is not a long ball hitter.
We call him Shifty Schiff. We don't call him Shifty Schiff for nothing. He's a shifty, dishonest guy.
And when you see little Adam Schiff go out and lie and lie and stand at the mic, smart guy, by the way.
You little pencil neck.
Now, you can chalk that up to a childish man behaving childishly, but he was the president. And he still is, right now, the unquestioned leader of his party. So even as the DOJ's inspector general today began investigating the matter, Republican lawmakers were downplaying it. Senator Charles Grassley saying in a statement today, quote, "Investigations into members of Congress and staff are nothing new." Congressman Chris Stewart, who sits on the House Intelligence Committee, saying, quote, "I support investigating leaks of classified information," which, of course, glides right past the evidence that this was no ordinary leak investigation. Everything we're learning about it suggests, not to us, but to intelligence and law enforcement professionals, that this just plain reeks. As House Intel member Mike Quigley told Armanu Raju this afternoon, the bottom line, from the first day of the Russia investigation, I assumed a hostile government would do something like this. I just didn't think it would be our own hostile government. And again, it's not like the former president was hiding anything. You've already seen the personal animus, the name-calling. In addition, the ex-president was loudly calling for action. Quoting from a now-deleted tweet from February of 2018, quote, "Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information. Must be stopped." Again, this was as the investigation was underway. And again, according to the Times, it came up empty. Let me repeat that. It came up empty. All of the allegations you heard the former president make amounted to nothing. It was all bluster from the king of it. Now, as for former Attorney General William Barr, three sources tell the Times that when he became Attorney General, he revived the probe and put a trusted prosecutor on it. Barr spoke with Politico today. Here's their lead. Quote, "Former Attorney General William Barr on Friday distanced himself from reports that the Trump Justice Department seized communications records belonging to two prominent Democratic lawmakers who were spearheading investigations into then-President Donald Trump. In a phone interview, Barr said he didn't recall getting briefed on the moves," which is a clever answer because he certainly might not have been briefed on the moves made before he was AG, but it says nothing about the moves he himself reportedly made. He also told Politico that during his time as Attorney General, he was, quote, "not aware of any congressman's records being sought in a leak case," which again plays funny tricks with tense. Was he not aware at the time? Well, of course. Did he become aware retrospectively? It sounds like splitting hairs, but William Barr is no dope. What he most certainly is, however, is a proven dissembler and evader.
Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone?
I wouldn't.
Yes or no?
Could you repeat that question?
I will repeat it. Yeah. Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone? Yes or no, please, sir.
The president or anybody else.
Seems you would remember something like that and be able to tell us.
Yeah, but I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. I mean, there have been discussions of matters out there that They have not asked me to open an investigation, but
perhaps they've suggested.
I don't know. I wouldn't say suggest.
Hinted?
I don't know.
Inferred? You don't know.
Doesn't know? Knows and won't say? Will say but won't lie. Won't lie but will deceive. The man has a record dating back to his blatant mischaracterization of the Mueller report. He's also not afraid to cover just about anything with a thick slathering of don't recalls.
You can't recall whether you have discussed those cases with anyone in the White House, including the President of the United States. My recollection is I have not discussed those.
But you don't recall for sure.
Let me move on.
I don't recall whether that was related to me.
I don't recall any discussion about Stone.
Right.
I don't recall that phrase in what context.
I don't know. So, yeah, I can't recall, but I don't remember that. Not that I recall. I can't actually remember how it came up, but someone mentioned it.
The former attorney general also told Politico, quote, he was not aware of who we were looking at in any of the cases. Also that he, quote, never discussed the Lee cases with Trump. He didn't really ask me any of the specifics. Again, he didn't have to. The boss was shouting it from the rafters. So we mentioned the new reporting on this tonight. CNN's Evan Perez joins us with that. Evan, what more are we learning about the Justice Department's subpoenas to Apple?
Well, John, this was an extraordinary request. The breadth of it is simply just broader than I can remember any of these types of requests. We're talking about 73 phone numbers, 36 email addresses, according to Apple, was part of this demand that came in a subpoena in February of 2018. And we now know that at least two members of Congress, we know that some of their staff members and some of their family members, including somebody who was underage, was part of this dragnet that that the Justice Department was asking for, or the metadata was asking for from Apple. And here's this, John. A person we talked to, familiar with the investigation, said that the request basically asked for data going back to the inception of all of these accounts up to the present time, which was February of 2018. Let me repeat that. From the inception of those accounts. So in some cases, probably a decade. It's not clear. So what we know is that that Apple turned over what is now, we now know, is just metadata. It wasn't any of the content. But, you know, this was something that was done in 2018, and it wasn't until this year, in May, that they were able to notify the account holders that their data was taken by the Justice Department.
From inception. That's right. Staggering. So was Apple aware of who was being investigated here, and did they find it odd that they weren't just subpoenaed but also put under a gag order?
Well, they did not know. They had no idea what the target of this investigation was, what the subject was, what it related to. And in some cases, it appears they didn't even know that these were related to members of Congress. They sent these email notifications to the owners of these accounts. And then as a result of that, they learned that these were accounts belonging to Eric Swalwell and Adam Schiff, two members of Congress. And it is unusual it's not unusual for them to be told that they can't disclose this. What happened in this case, John, was that this non-disclosure order, this gag order, was extended three times every year. And it wasn't until just days before the Biden administration comes into office that it appears the Justice Department stops essentially responding to requests from Apple saying, do you still need this data? Do you want us to keep this gag order? And it appears they just lost interest. And that's the reason why today you have this investigation from the Inspector General, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, and the Deputy Attorney General, Lisa Monaco, asked for this investigation to be done, because there clearly is some very unusual things about this.
Indeed, to say the least. Thank you, Evan Perez, for your reporting. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Joining us now, CNN political analyst and New York Times Washington correspondent Maggie Haberman, also CNN chief political analyst Gloria Borger. Gloria, let me start with you. This new reporting clearly illustrates just how big the scope of this actually was. 73 phone numbers, 36 email accounts looking for records dating back to inception. This really just sounds like a huge dragnet.
Well, and as we peel the onion, I think we might discover there were more email addresses and more phone numbers that they were looking at. And what becomes clearer and clearer is that this was really a fishing expedition by people who were interested in finding out where these so-called leaks came from. You had a president of the United States who was screaming from the rafters, as you illustrated just before, that he wanted that he believed Adam Schiff was a leaker. Democrats were leakers. And as a result, his Justice Department, both under Jeff Sessions and then again with Bill Barr, who seemed to reinvigorate what was seemed to be a petering out investigation, appoints someone to take all these leak investigations and look at them, because the president of the United States, and he said, he told Politico, that there were cabinet members and the intelligence community who were providing pressure on him, I think, to kind of get this all done. And as a result, we have what we have. My big question that remains unanswered is, what evidence was provided to a grand jury to get these phone numbers? I mean, what evidence did they have that all of these numbers need to be tracked? We just don't know.
Was it properly predicated? Answers to that might come from the Inspector General report. We just don't know. So, Maggie, you know, what do you make of all this reporting? Because there is some irony here, right? That President Trump was virtually always complaining that people were investigating him, but his own Justice Department was involved in this sweeping and, as we've been told, reasonably unprecedented investigation or fishing expedition, as Gloria just said.
Right. Look, and as Gloria just said, we don't know yet the scope of this. We don't know how many additional numbers or emails there might be, or additional people who were being looked at. But certainly, to target, we know that DOJ targets reporters. This has happened under previous administrations, happened under not just Trump, but also under Obama. What is different here is this is lawmakers. This is lawmakers and family members of lawmakers. And again, we don't know if it stops there. So to your point, what do I make of it is that there was a president who, as you noted, was constantly talking about leaks and concerned about leaks, and particularly leaks as related to the investigation into him and his campaign and people around him and any ties to Russia or any connections to Russia. And the DOJ, started under Jeff Sessions, began pulling records from people in a way that every expert says we just have not really seen before. And we'll see where it goes. But you touched on something that I think is important. There's no evidence right now that it turned up anything, given how incredibly broad it was. Now, maybe something will be revealed where it did turn up something, but it's pretty remarkable how wide a net they cast to apparently not actually come up with anything.
You know, Gloria, if this was reversed and the Obama Justice Department was seizing data of Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, I have a hard time thinking they'd be so ho-hum about it as they were today, with Republicans saying, oh, you know, we support leak investigations. Investigations happen all the time.
Yeah. And how about gag orders that were extended three times so the people who were the targets of the investigation didn't know about it for a long time? I mean, that is something that they would be screaming from the rafters about. No, there's a lot of whataboutism here. We heard, Chuck Grassley put out a press release today saying, this goes on. This goes on all the time, and I'm all in favor of finding out about illegal leaks. So we should, we should keep on doing that. But as Maggie just pointed out, this is different. These are two members of Congress, one of whom, or both of them, I guess, were targets of Donald Trump's. So this is very different. And, it's very clear from looking at all of this and looking at the history is that, Donald Trump treated the Justice Department like they were just a part of the Trump organization. And I think while Barr at some points may have tried to keep his distance, there was no getting away from what the president of the United States was demanding. In fact, he fired Jeff Sessions because Jeff Sessions said, I don't work for you. I work for the American people.
Maggie, there's so many different angles to this, and it's so deeply serious. But there's also a present and future political angle here as well. We are talking about the person who's still the de facto leader of the Republican Party. And I know it's, in the future, but he's more or less the current front runner for the Republican nomination for president, too. So I'm wondering how you think this will play into Republican politics. Are they all just going to line up behind him at this point?
I think the answer is yes, John. I mean, I think that what we have seen is the parties are so incredibly polarized that essentially, much more so with Republicans at the moment, essentially what happens is that when the either the former president says something or it's perceived that, that in the mind of his supporters that the media is somehow against him, they then stick with his position. And in this case, it would be the position of the Trump administration. So I don't think you're going to hear a lot of outcry from Republicans. There might be a little bit here and there. There might be some Republican candidates for 2024 who would be willing to say something, but I don't think that's going to be a driving force for them. I do think Lori is exactly right, and you're exactly right, that if this had been the Obama administration that did this, there would be a lot of protests from Republicans. I don't see this playing as a major political issue, and frankly, that is going to detract from accountability issues and people sort of paying attention to something that is actually in the public interest. I do want to note, and all of this unprecedented activity took place under former President Trump. The Biden Justice Department continued one of these gags, and that was in relation to my colleagues. And mm-hmm. So I do think that there is a lot of work that has to be done in looking at what happens across the board with DOJ and how it is approaching this information gathering. We know that President Biden has taken a very strong public position, and the White House has taken a strong public position that they're not going to do that. But I think it's going to take a while to restore faith, just given all of the collective actions of the last 5 years.
There's an issue of prosecutorial discretion among career prosecutors right. That's very real and worth exploring. And I think we all need to learn a lot more about. Gloria, Maggie, thank you both so much sure. For being with us tonight. House Intel Chairman Adam Schiff briefed the committee today. Joining us now, a member of that committee, Democrat Jim Himes of Connecticut, who says he does not believe he was targeted by the Trump investigation. So congratulations on that front, Congressman. I know you can't tell us much about what happened in this meeting, but broadly speaking, what were you told about the scope of these records that were seized, what it all means, and what's your initial reaction?
Yeah, John. Well, first of all, we don't know a lot. I don't think I was targeted, but it turns out that the way Apple notified members was by sending them an email from an account like something like apple@info or info@apple or something. So we just don't know. Needless to say, our chairman and others have asked the Department of Justice for a complete list of those members of Congress and associated staff and family members and children that were subpoenaed, whose records were subpoenaed, and we have not been provided that information. So we have no idea the answer to your second question, which is how broadly does this go? And, you know, without betraying the confidence of a closed meeting, a lot of us, what happened was bad enough, John. This is the use of arguably next to the military, the most powerful thing that the federal government has, the Department of Justice. It was the use of the Department of Justice to advance a quirky political aim of the president. And so what's horrifying here is it's good that the inspector general is going to do his work, but that inspector general is going to operate inside the Department of Justice. What we're talking about here, of course, is yet another flagrant constitutional abuse. And we learned about it by reading it. At least I learned about it, and many people learned about it by reading it in the newspaper. What other elements of the government were compromised? Was the IRS used as a political tool for Donald Trump? Was the CIA used as a political tool for Donald Trump? Unless we have something bigger than an inspector general, unless we have, I'm thinking back to the, you know, the church committee of the 1970s, unless we have something truly all of government, we may never know the answers to that question. And that leaves us profoundly vulnerable to the next Donald Trump, the smarter Donald Trump, doing this all over again.
You're asking for either a select or special committee or a special prosecutor?
Well, you know, we've spent the last 2 months talking about a commission around January 6. I was there on January 6. I was very much at risk on January 6. But if you asked me to choose between a commission to figure out exactly what happened on January 6th and January 5th and January 7th, or a commission that would look at the abuse of the State Department, which, of course, got Donald Trump impeached the first time, the abuse of the DOJ, and what else happened out there, I would choose the second. I would like to know from soup to nuts, because we know that this president at every opportunity used the tools of the American public, the federal government, for his own personal gain. I want to know where that stopped. And that may go beyond a select committee. That is probably a commission.
So as we play to the top of the program, former Attorney General William Barr often seems fuzzy on recalling certain events. And today he told Politico that he was, quote, not aware of who we were looking at in any of the cases, end quote, and that then President Trump didn't ask specifics. So Do you buy that from Bill Barr?
Well, what we know about Bill Barr is that he was more than willing to break precedent at the Department of Justice to, as an attorney general, actually act as the prime defender of Donald Trump. He, of course, did that with his letter describing the Mueller report, which then Mueller had to say, wait a minute, that's not what I said. So, you know, he's not a good source on this stuff. But clearly we're going to need to know exactly what happened, because it's not enough to say that we were looking for leaks. Look, if you tell me that a member of Congress, you know, took $10 million from the Russian government in exchange for our nuclear codes, by all means, go after that guy. But that is not what is happening here. It's never happened before. Think about it. There's an old saying that keeps going through my head. I think it was a New York judge who once commented that a skillful district attorney can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. And my Republican friends need to ask themselves if with under a Democratic president, they would be comfortable with their being exposed and their children being exposed because some assistant U.S. attorney tells a grand jury that we're going after the potential of a leak within Republican members of the Intelligence Committee. It's outrageous that they're not joining us and standing up and saying this cannot stand.
73 phone accounts, 36 email accounts. Congressman Himes, we appreciate you being with us tonight.
Thank you, John.
Next, what our law enforcement and intelligence professionals, both of whom were attacked by the former president, make of all this and how far from the norm they believe this is. Later, the current president's overseas trip and what Vladimir Putin just said about the current president and, yes, the former one. The White House weighed in on the breaking news today. Press Secretary Jen Psaki mincing no words.
First of all, an IG investigation looks into how this happened, how it could possibly happen. And let me be absolutely clear. The behavior, these actions, the president finds them absolutely appalling. He ran for president in part because of the abuse of power by the last president and by the last attorney general.
Joining us now, former director of national intelligence and current CNN national security analyst James Clapper. Also CNN senior law enforcement analyst and former deputy FBI director Andrew McCabe, who knows what it's like to be targeted by the former president. And Andrew, the news late tonight, 73 phone numbers, 36 email addresses from Apple, at least one subpoena to Microsoft. We were talking to Gloria and Maggie, and both agree it feels like maybe we're just at the beginning of learning something about, you know, something even bigger and potentially even more troubling. What do you think?
I think that's entirely possible. You know, it's death by a thousand cuts. We're just learning about these things as they happen to dribble out because gag orders expire and service providers provide notification. But I want to put some context on this for your viewers, John. This is so wildly different from anything I ever experienced running many sensitive investigations, some of which occasionally involve members of Congress, some of which were leak cases. This is like the equivalent of carpet bombing the House Intelligence Committee with legal process, but of course, only on one side of the aisle. So the way it was executed, to me, reeks of political purpose.
Yeah, that's what we talk about when we talk about it being unprecedented, the scope and the size of it. And that's why there are still so many questions. Despite that, Director Clapper, I mentioned earlier that Republican Chuck Grassley, who's been in Congress since 1975, said today that investigations into lawmakers and staff are nothing new. I get it. There are corruption investigations. We see them a lot. But secretly seizing communications data and the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, to say nothing of family members, that's really nothing new?
Well, I would disagree profoundly with Senator Grassley. Yes, there have been, as Andy can attest, there have been investigations of individual members of Congress, normally for suspicion of criminal activity, but not like this and the sweeping nature of this. This is quite different. And, shocking, stunning, but not surprising, a phrase that we often find ourselves using about revelations of abuse of power by the Trump administration. And I'm sure there's a lot more to this, and there will be other examples that are going to come out over time.
So, Andy, I want to read another portion of the New York Times reporting, which they say is part and parcel of the newly revealed investigation into Congressman Schiff and leaks in press reports that made Donald Trump look bad. Quote, The White House was adamant that the sources be found and prosecuted, and the Justice Department began a broad look at national security officials from the Obama administration. That's according to five people briefed in the inquiry. While most officials were ruled out, investigators opened cases that focus on Mr. Comey and his deputy, Andrew G. McCabe, the people said, end quote. Did you know you were under investigation at that time, or whether your personal data was seized? And, you know, and by the way, we should note the former president was attacking you as recently as yesterday.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I knew I was a constant target of his. I mean, he was constantly saying defamatory and wildly false things about me and my family. It's been going on for years. Like you said, it happened yesterday. But did I know at the time that I was the subject of a leaking investigation? No, of course I didn't know. You know, I have had the unfortunate experience of having to find these things out as the last few years have played out in this nightmare. You know, I learned in 2018, I got a notification just like the ones we're learning about this week. I got a notification from my email provider that they had received a court order for process on my account a year earlier, and they had been prohibited from informing me about that for a year. So, you know, when those things happen, John, it's like it's one thing to have the president tweet nasty things about you and you realize, like, this guy really hates me and he's coming after me and it's not letting up. But when you see that the machinery of the Department of Justice has been activated against you and they're actively trying to throw you in jail, it is absolutely terrifying.
So, Director Clapper, the former Attorney General Bill Barr told Politico today that he doesn't recall being told that prosecutors in the Justice Department had subpoenaed Apple for data from the accounts of these House Democrats along with their staff and family members. He doesn't recall. Did you buy that?
Well, it's not the first time. He's at best disingenuous. No, I don't buy it.
Andy, what do you think?
I mean, come on. This is the guy who stood behind the podium at DOJ and lied to the world about the substance of the Mueller report. So his answers to Senator Harris's question in that clip that we've seen many times on TV today, you know, as an investigator, as someone who's interviewed and interrogated, you know, hundreds of people, he shows like every one of the signs of deception in that answer. So, no, I don't take him at his word.
Director, how much faith do you put in this DOJ Inspector General investigation?
Well, I think I kind of agree with Congressman Hines. I think it's bigger than just DOJ. And of course, we're talking about the Inspector General of the Department of Justice. And I think this is probably going to turn out to be far more reaching than just one department of the government. I think we're going to find other examples of abuse like this. So I think Congressman Hines had a great idea, although it probably never happened, is some sort of outside commission.
Director James Clapper, Andrew McCabe, I thank you both for this. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
More on this investigation in just a moment, and the comparisons that were almost immediately made between Trump and another president with an enemies list, Richard Nixon. Watergate veteran Carl Bernstein joins us when 360 continues. Revelations that the former president and his administration used the mechanisms of government to pursue perceived enemies drew immediate comparisons to another disgraced former president, Richard Nixon, and his enemies list. One rather infamous memo written by then White House counsel John Dean in 1971 succinctly explained the purpose of that list, quote, stated a bit more bluntly, how we can use the available federal machinery to screw our political enemies. I'm joined now by a veteran of the Watergate era, journalist and author and CNN political analyst Carl Bernstein. Carl, there's a lot we still don't know about this. But look, you know, the parallels between the Nixon enemy list and what we are now seeing from the former Trump administration, how apt are they?
Well, they're apt to the extent that Nixon wanted to screw his political enemies, no question, and so did Donald Trump. But Trump's actions go far, much farther than Nixon's and were much more grievous because Trump is really guilty of crimes against democracy. It's not just about screwing his enemies. It's about getting everything he wants for himself, for his own political ends, for his own financial gain, for his family. He would undermine the very basic premise of democracy, as would now a Republican Party that is in thrall to Donald Trump and these kinds of activities. There's a conspiracy, an ongoing conspiracy by Trump and those around him and the hierarchy of the Republican Party that is in thrall and obeisant to Donald Trump to undermine democracy. That's what this all fits together as.
To your point, there is another key difference between Nixon and Trump here, which is that in the Nixon era, there were Republicans.
That's exactly
right.
Who
stood up? Who stood up to Richard Nixon?
Not only stood up, Richard Nixon was about to be impeached and convicted in the Senate and forced to leave office. That's why he resigned. What do we have today? We have Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy, who are co-conspirators of this attempt. We have an intent to undermine democracy. Look at what the Republicans are doing to keep people from voting, to suppress voting so that Donald Trump or his acolytes or this Republican Party that is an authoritarian, undemocratic, unrepublican party, what is the goal here? It is not to further democracy. It's to undermine it. And Trump's whole presidency is about crimes against democracy.
You see a through line. Between you see a through line between, you know, this DOJ investigation, the foreign events, Rudy Giuliani, pressure in Ukraine.
Roger Stone, go through the whole
list.
The
voting, the undermining the elections. You see a through line there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is all about doing Donald Trump's will against his enemies for his political gain, for his financial gain. This is not Nixon. Nixon, indeed, wanted to screw his political enemies. Nixon, indeed, was, you know, guilty of obstruction of justice, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a much larger notion of satisfying every will and whim and a party in thrall to this that will not stop this president even now that he is out of office.
So where does it go?
We don't know where it goes, but what we do know is that there is no leadership in the Republican Party that is willing to say, except for Liz Cheney, except for Mitt Romney, a few more, it's not McConnell, it's not Kevin McCarthy. Look, they have laid down and the train is running over them, and the train is running over our democratic principles that have guided this country throughout our history. We have never had a political party that has tried to suppress votes such as we're seeing now. We had the Dixiecrats. We had segregationist Democrats who controlled and tried to keep black people from voting, but most of the party did not go along with that.
What can or should the current Justice Department under Merrick Garland do? What can or should the current President Joe Biden do about this? Because you don't think it's over. I mean, Donald Trump is the former president, but you don't think this effort is over.
No, I don't. It's obviously not over. All we have to do is listen to your show, Anderson, every night and what we put on the air and what we read in the New York Times and the Washington Post. Look, what we ought to be doing as journalists, particularly, we need to find out everything that happened in the Trump presidency in terms of these crimes against democracy, including the pandemic. Homicidal negligence by a president of the United States, that figures in this, too. What was that homicidal negligence about and resulted in tens, hundreds of thousands of deaths? It was for his own political purposes. We haven't. That's not Nixon. This is something far greater. And what the Congress of the United States, investigations, the Department of Justice, yes, but it's going to be the press to find out what indeed has happened to us and this continuing line into the Republican Party today and this ongoing conspiracy of intent to undermine democracy.
Carl, we got about 25 seconds left. I want to bring it back to the beginning, at least where we were this week on it. I want your reaction when you read this story initially from the New York Times about the scope of this investigation.
Well, it's a fishing expedition. It is to find out sources of the leaks. Well, why weren't these people looking to find out what the hell happened with Russia? What was their interest so much about leaks? And they're after the enemies, gone after Schiff, gone after the Democrats, who indeed led the Russia investigation. It's patently obvious I think, you know, we don't need much more of a roadmap.
Carl Bernstein, thank you for being with us.
Good to be with you.
Just ahead, there is more breaking news on this Friday evening as President Biden meets economic allies on his first trip as president abroad. Vladimir Putin discusses his relationship with the U.S. and prays for the former president in his brand new interview days before the two men meet for their summit. The details when we continue. President Biden today met with leaders from some of the world's biggest economies, the G7 kickoff, part of his first international trip abroad as president, but just a table setter for the highly anticipated meeting scheduled to occur next week with Vladimir Putin. Russia's leader spoke with NBC News. This is what he had to say about Biden and his predecessor.
Well, even now, I believe that former U.S. President Mr. Trump is an extraordinary individual, talented individual. Otherwise, he would not have become U.S. president. President Biden, of course, is radically different from Trump because President Biden is a career man. He has spent virtually his entire adulthood in politics. Just think of the number of years he spent in the Senate. A different kind of person. And it is my great hope that, yes, there are some advantages, some disadvantages, but there will not be any impulse-based movements on behalf of the sitting U.S. president.
Our chief international correspondent, Clarissa Ward, is following Biden and has the latest. So, Clarissa, the fact that Vladimir Putin is heaping praise on Donald Trump, what kind of message does that send before he sits down with President Joe Biden?
You know, I lost track at some point, John, of all the sort of adjectives he used to describe Trump. They're extraordinary, talented, colorful. You know, I think what President Putin always likes to do is keep everybody on the back foot, keep everybody guessing, keep everybody anxious. I think he's signaling that this is not going to be an easy summit. He did also have some praise for President Biden, but certainly it's going to be a difficult conversation that these two leaders are going to have. And it's not clear yet what real substantive progress can be made from this very difficult conversation. And certainly we're no closer to knowing that based on the clip that we just heard of that interview.
You have to say the extraordinary gamesmanship before this summit even begins has been really remarkable. Putin was also confronted with accusations that he's a killer. I want to play a clip of that.
Let me give you some names. Anna Politkovskaya, shot dead. Alexander Litvinenko, poisoned by polonium. Sergei Magnitsky, allegedly beaten and died in prison. Boris Nemtsov, shot moments from the Kremlin, moments from here. Mikhail Lesin, died of blunt trauma in Washington, D.C. I mean, are all of these a coincidence, Mr. President?
Look, you know, I don't want to come across as being rude, but this looks like some kind of indigestion, except that it's verbal indigestion. You've mentioned many individuals who indeed suffered and perished at different points in time for various reasons at the hands of different individuals.
Is Putin used to be putting on, being put on the spot like that?
I think that he would have anticipated being put on the spot doing an interview like this. I don't think he would have been surprised by the tough nature of those questions. But I do think it's interesting to see how he almost seems to enjoy his reputation in the West. As Keir Simmons is reading out that list of all these opponents of the Kremlin who have ended up dead, he starts out by laughing and then says, "Послушайте меня," like, listen to me, here's the deal. And then goes on to talk about verbal indigestion. I'm not exactly clear what he means by that, but he does have this extraordinary ability, John, President Putin, to deny something at the same time as clearly enjoying the fact that this is a part of his reputation.
The look on his face was something there. So what kind of message is President Biden expected to try to deliver at the summit? Is he going to raise the issue of the poisoning and jailing of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny?
He's made it abundantly clear that he is going to raise all the issues that he thinks are important. And international human rights, you know, the attempted murder of a dissident very much falls under that purview. And President Putin has said, listen, this is off limits. We are not going to be discussing internal domestic Russian political affairs. But we also have heard from the White House that it doesn't matter whether President Putin wants to talk about it. This will be raised. The real question is, what does that achieve? Where does that conversation investigation go? What are the openings here? And, you know, as we heard today, CNN's Matthew Chan spoke to Putin's press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, and he said, listen, the reason for this entire summit is that relations are in such a poor state that really this meeting needs to happen in order to ensure that things do not degrade any further. So it may be that really at its core, this is a summit which is designed not to deliver anything tangible or positive, but just to prevent things from deteriorating further, trying to find possibly some common areas that the two countries can work together on to prevent the relationship from being completely derailed. But I would not expect any sort of earth-shattering positive news to come out of this at all.
Clarissa Ward, you'll be watching. Thank you very much. Back here at home, a startling new report on the threatening text messages, voicemails, and emails Georgia's top election official, a Republican, received, as well as his family. All of it sparked by the voter fraud lies from the former president. Another reminder now of how these are not normal political times and how much of the reason for it can be traced to the former president and his voter fraud lies, in this case, about losing the state of Georgia. According to Reuters, top election officials in the state and their families are facing violent threats and intimidation delivered them in text messages, emails, and voicemails. Also, the state's top election official, a Republican, says a family member's home was broken into. More from 360's Gary Tuchman.
One of the text messages said, "You and your family will be killed very slowly."
Linda So is a journalist with Reuters who just wrote a story about the threat to election workers following Donald Trump's election loss. The text she read was sent to the wife of Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger.
That previous text came from a sender called Raffensperger@revenge.us.
A made-up name that has so far been untraceable. Trump has made his hostility to Raffensperger very clear. This was 2 days before the Capitol insurrection.
Hello, Georgia. By the way, there's no way we lost Georgia. There's no way. That was a rigged election.
Reuters reports the Raffensperger family has received a constant stream of threatening texts for months. Keep opposing the audit of Fulton County's 2020 election ballots, and somebody in your family is going to have a very unfortunate incident. That came from the address murder@raffensperger.com. And please pray. We plan for the death of you and your family every day. I'm sorry. From America@Jesus.com. The Secretary of State and his wife made a decision to go into temporary hiding following the multitude of threats and after an intimidating house break-in that their daughter-in-law and grandchildren endured.
She returned to her home one evening with her children to find that the garage door had been pulled up. The door leading to her house was open. All of the lights in the house had been turned on. Items within the house had been moved around, but nothing was taken.
Many other election workers have been threatened. Richard Barron is the Fulton County, Georgia elections director. We talked to him as absentee ballots were being processed and scanned in a Georgia presidential race that at the time was too close to call.
You haven't gotten pressure from the campaigns, but do you feel pressure on your shoulders?
Well, yes, because we want to make sure all the votes count.
Election workers did their jobs well, but Trump's lies and innuendos resulted in the elections director receiving
hundreds of phone calls, emails, threatening hanging. There was one in particular that really alarmed him. A caller had said that they were planning on standing him before a firing squad and killing him.
And here is the audio of one of those phone calls.
I think you need a pair of handcuffs slapped on you. It's quite obvious the fraud that went on. So why don't you just come out and admit it and quit jerking the American people around? Just wondering how much they paid you. When I'm done with you, you'll be in prison.
The day after the Capitol insurrection, CNN asked Brad Raffensperger what he would say to Donald Trump.
Well, obviously, that's why I've said from day one that we have to be really mindful of our speech, because we can't spin people up and play people and get them into emotional frenzy, emotional state. Deal with the facts.
Wow. And Gary joins us now from Atlanta. Gary, Secretary Raffensperger was just on CNN last hour. What did he say about this?
Yeah, the Secretary of State says he and his wife have had to spend a considerable amount of time away from their grandchildren since the election because of the threats. They just want to keep them safe. He says he's a conservative Republican, but he can't believe what's happened to his party. He says we got to clean up our backyard. And he also said this interesting thing, John. He said this country is bigger than just one person, a clear reference to Donald Trump. John?
Has to keep his grandchildren safe. Gary Tuchman, thank you so much. Before we go tonight, a quick programming note. Anderson sat down for an exclusive interview with former President Barack Obama to talk about fatherhood, leadership, and his legacy. You can catch it tonight at 11 right here on CNN. A lot of news tonight. It continues, so let's hand it over to Chris for Cuomo Primetime. Sir.